This is the Rich Eisen Show. Right now. Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
We got to find out what is going on with Odell. What's he looking for?
Lamar Jackson.
I don't think anybody saw this coming.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Now, isn't that amazing? At the beginning of the week, I'm like, okay, but at some point by the end of this week, we're going to find out where he's going.
Earlier on the show, NFL Network insider Tom Pelissero, Super Bowl champion Ndamukong Suh. Coming up, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Chris Mannix. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on this program. If you missed Tom Pelissero talking about the Odell Beckham Jr. signing in Baltimore, when he thinks the Aaron Rodgers trade to the Jets is going to pop, what the Cardinals may do with the third overall pick in the draft. If you missed my conversation in studio with Ndamukong Suh, stay right where you are. Certainly if you're watching on the Roku channel, because we re-air on channel 210. There's our YouTube page. There's also the Rich Eisen Show collection page as part of our Roku channel relationship. It's a video on demand service. There's our podcast. Please listen to our podcast every day. Get us so you never know when you might just want to listen to us on demand. It's where all podcasts can be acquired through the Cumulus Podcast Network. And I have said the word podcast five times in the last 30 seconds. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We haven't talked about the Masters yet. We will do that shortly, but we turn to the phone lines and welcome in from Sports Illustrated, longtime friend of this program, Chris Mannix, back here on the program. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good, Rich. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Let's get right into it. Rudy Gobert's not on a plane to Los Angeles. What happened in that huddle with Minnesota yesterday, Chris?
Certainly, you know, the frustration of the first half of that game against the Pelicans came out. You know, Rudy Gobert's been battling some health issues over the last, few weeks. You know, I think Kyle Anderson was frustrated at what he perceived at least to be a lack of defensive effort at that point in time from Gobert, and it just bubbled over. But, you know, this has been a maddeningly inconsistent season in Minnesota. I mean, this is a team that expected to be at a minimum in the top four of the Western Conference standings after the Gobert trade. As we speak, they're going to enter the play-in tournament as the number eight seed. So this was all something in the moment, but more importantly, a lot of frustration over the course of the season. And now, you know, the Timberwolves will have to go into a critical game, you know, without their starting center and as well as starting small forward with Jaden McDaniels out for the year after punching a wall in that game. So the hits just keep on coming in Minnesota.
And if they'd only kept their hands to themselves in game 82, right? I mean, is this indicative as to why Gobert was available? I know the Jazz were obviously remaking their roster, and we saw what was going on with Danny Ainge walking into Utah, and Donovan Mitchell is now the star of Cleveland for a four-seeded Cavaliers team that's hoping to crash some parties in the East. But is there any larger picture here with Gobert and what happened with this team?
Well, I think what you have to assess moving forward is, can you salvage all this? Now, Minnesota is going to be motivated to try to rebuild this whole thing with Gobert, with Towns, with Anthony Edwards going into next season. I think there'll be some substantive changes. Chris Finch is certainly somebody that there's some pressure on in the moment, but they gave up so much for Rudy in that trade that they simply can't just pull the chute on it right now, because even if they wanted to trade him, you're not going to get more than, you know, quarters on the dollar for Rudy Gobert. So they've got to find a way to try to figure this out next season. Now, this year has been, it's about more than Rudy Gobert. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns missed more than half the season, you know, with a significant calf injury. So we don't know what the Minnesota Timberwolves at full strength really look like. And that to me has got to be the priority going into next year. This year, whether it ends in Los Angeles on Tuesday or it ends shortly thereafter, there's no chance of them doing anything substantive this year. But next year, they've got to figure out the right mix, because they've got way too much invested in Gobert to give up.
Chris Mannix here on the Rich Eisen Show. Huge game in Los Angeles. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this. Things are breaking the Lakers' way, which I didn't. I mean, you want to talk about, nobody saw it coming. They were out of the play-in tournament. Now they're the top seed, if you will, within it, with a Timberwolves team coming off of what we just discussed. I mean, things are breaking the Lakers' way. And then they'll take on Memphis, which will be great if they win this, obviously. It'll be a great first-round series. I assume Shannon Sharp will have tickets. It'll be great. Chris, don't you think?
Yeah, I think the ideal scenario for the Lakers would have been to finish at six, because not only do you avoid the play-in tournament and give your older guys a couple extra days of rest, but you get a shot at Sacramento, which most people believe is the most vulnerable team in the top half of the playoff bracket. But this is probably the next best thing, because, yeah, you got to go through the play-in, but you get a wounded Minnesota team, you get them at home so you don't have to travel, and if you win, you'll be off till at least Saturday. So you got plenty of time for LeBron James and Anthony Davis to rest those injuries, and you're no longer dealing with back-to-back, so you don't have to worry about that either. Look, Rich, I've been on the record that I think the Lakers win the West. I wrote that 3 weeks ago. I stand by it still right now, even as they go into the play-in. The defense has been great. Davis has been great. LeBron is great. Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, these guys have been solid in their roles. You know, if they don't beat Minnesota and they have to force their way in by beating the winner of the 9-10 game, then I'd be a little concerned, because I do think they need this four-day break after the first play-in game. But if they do and they get rested, look, they're not going to have home court advantage against Memphis, but Memphis is not coming into the playoffs, you know, full steam. They're not going to have all their guys, Brandon Clark, of course, out for the year with that injury, and the Ja Morant situation is still kind of fresh. So I like the Lakers' chances against Memphis, against everybody in the West.
I got to be honest with you, Chris. I knew what you wrote. Just hearing it out of your mouth is jarring. You think the Lakers will win the Western Conference as you and I are sitting here the Monday before the play-in game for the Lakers at home. You think that?
I do. It will be unprecedented because, well, you have had, you know, bottom seeds make a run to the finals before, but you haven't had a team in the play-in do it. And look, if you're looking for any extra motivation, like, would this not immediately rocket to the top of LeBron James's resume if he could lead a Lakers team in this position into the finals? Now, I don't think they win a championship. I want to be clear about that, because I just don't think they beat Milwaukee or Boston or any of the top-tier Eastern Conference teams that are going to come out. But I look at the Western Conference field. I see a Denver team that is not great defensively. I see a Memphis team that is wounded. The Suns, a lot of people are high on the Suns. I think they're great, but they're a top-heavy team, and you're asking a lot of guys like Torrey Craig and Josh Okogie and, you know, guys that aren't used to playing major roles in the postseason to step up and play big roles. So I think this is the year that the Suns are more vulnerable than what they might be in the future, and that's why the Lakers will take advantage. You know, they've got a favorable bracket. Look, they wouldn't face Phoenix until they got to the conference finals, or Denver. So you're talking Memphis, then you're talking maybe Golden State, maybe Sacramento. The Lakers went 3-1 against the Warriors in the regular season. So I just think things are breaking their way to have kind of one of those, you know, or surreal kind of postseasons.
The crossover NBA podcast host and Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Mannix here with us on the Rich Eisen Show. What do you think the NBA investigation of the Dallas Mavericks is going to, quote unquote, turn up, Chris?
I mean, not much, because look, I think the Mavericks could have been a little more subtle with it, and maybe because of that, the NBA will fine them. But this just can't rise to the level of docking Dallas a draft pick, because too many teams do it. They just don't do it in as overt a way. Look, the NBA didn't punish Oklahoma City a few years ago when they just decided not to play Al Horford in the second half of the season. Oklahoma City has not played Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for stretches. They, you know, claimed 1 year they were resting Lou Dort because he had to get ready for the Canadian national national team. Like, this, like, I mean, there's just some goofiness that goes on in the NBA in the second half of seasons. I mean, I think the Mavericks, I mean, they just took a bullhorn and announced what they were going to do, basically, and that's not something the league office, you know, takes kindly to. But outside of a fine, I just don't see anything substantive happening to Dallas.
So then how does a team go from last year's Western Conference Finals to, as a sixth seed, with a nice head of steam, thanks to a Kyrie Irving acquisition, wind up pulling the plug on the season the Friday before the playoffs. How the hell did that happen, Chris?
Well, it all goes back to the Jalen Brunson decision. And, you know, Mark Cuban has tried to rewrite history a little bit over the last, you know, couple of days. But the reality is the Mavericks had multiple opportunities to lock Jalen Brunson up before he became a free agent, and they didn't do it. And because of that, he was able to walk to the Knicks. It left Dallas with a huge void at the point guard position and a huge void when it comes to a player that has proven he can play next to and succeed with Luka Doncic. That killed them going into the year. The Kyrie deal, I don't blame Kyrie Irving for what happened down the stretch in Dallas. I talk to people down there all the time, and the message I'm often, you know, given is that, look, Kyrie's been a good guy. He's been a good soldier. He's trying to fit in. Maybe he's trying to fit in too much, and we saw that early in his tenure in Dallas. The problem with this team is that it was just put together in the wrong way. They don't have great defenders. They don't have rim protectors. You know, all the things you need to be a successful playoff team, they don't have. To get Kyrie Irving, they had to trade Dorian Finney-Smith. There was this big to-do about Maxi Kleber coming back after the All-Star break. Maxi Kleber is fine, but he's not Dikembe Mutombo. And when you have two, you know, legitimately below-average defenders at the guard spots, you need a Dikembe Mutombo to clean up a lot of their mistakes. So this is a team that, you know, they're going to try to bring back Kyrie Irving, and if I was going to make a bet on it, I'd say they probably will. But it's not going to lead to a dramatic turnaround just having a full season with them. They need to find defensive-minded players. And as you know, guys like that are not a dime a dozen. You have to really work hard to get players like that, and the Mavericks going to have to do that.
So, Luka, when he said he's not happy, basically, he pointed out, I'm not smiling on the court as much as I used to, and then made a cryptic reference to something outside of basketball. Any idea what that is and if it's fixable, Chris?
Yeah, I think Luka's problem, from what I understand, is personal related. I don't know exactly what it is, but it was something that has bothered him in the last couple of months, second half of the season. Basketball-wise, look, he just wants help. And that's going to be the biggest challenge for Dallas, because they have not historically been a free agent destination. They gave up most of their best assets to get Kyrie Irving. They have not had much success at all in recent years in the draft. And look, they're probably going to hold on to their draft pick this time around because they, you know, went into that tank at the back half of the season. This is an important one. Like, it's going to be a lottery pick. They've got to hit on it. Somewhere between 10 and 14, they have got to hit on that pick, because that might be their best chance to bring in something substantive to help Luka, to help Kyrie, to help this team build over the next couple of years.
In a few minutes I have left with you, Chris Mannix, the story, I guess, or narrative going into these playoffs, West wide open. East, however, it's going to be one of the top three. It's a top-heavy conference. Is there a team that you could identify that could crash that party that we're not talking about in the East?
Well, Miami is the obvious one you look at, because the Heat, I mean, they have been a mess all season long. You know, Kyle Lowry, when he's played, has not been the same guy we've seen in recent years. But if they wind up winning their play-in spot and facing Boston in the first round, look, that's basically the same team that came within, you know, inches of a Jimmy Butler three-pointer of beating the Celtics in the conference finals last year. You know, guys like Butler, guys like Bam Adebayo, even guys like Lowry and Tyler Hero, you know, guys that have been there before with this Miami team, I'd be a little worried about them in the first round of the playoffs, because they're battle-tested. They've got a great coach in Eric Spoelstra. And, you know, Boston, as talented as they are, and they're a deeper, more talented team than Miami, they've got some question marks there. Like, can Robert Williams stay on the floor? Joe Mazzulla, his first postseason as an NBA head coach, and he's going into the playoffs, he already hemorrhaged, you know, one assistant, you know, with Damon Stoudemire leaving, and they never actually filled his spot when he took over for Ime Udoka. So I think the Celtics, even though, you know, on paper they look like the far superior team, if I'm looking at first-round teams that are the most vulnerable, if Boston plays Miami, I would probably put them on the list.
Any issue with Brown's hand, despite stitches? What do you got for me?
You know, it seems like it's going to be okay by Saturday, Sunday. You know, he had a massive wrap around his hand a few days ago. In the subsequent game, that wrap was significantly smaller. So everything I'm hearing is that come the playoffs, which again for the Celtics, thankfully, is, you know, could be, you know, 5-6 days away. He's going to be okay for the start of it.
Okay. And what other injuries? Paul George for the Clippers. I know Zion is, I can't believe we're still talking about his lack of availability here.
That Pelicans sent out goes in the non-update Hall of Fame. That was like a bunch of words that meant nothing, like they put out there. Like, Zion Williamson is continuing to work hard. Like, that was basically it. And, look, he's not going to play in the play-in tournament for sure. If by some miracle the Pelicans get into the playoffs, I wouldn't expect him in the first round. You know, that's for sure. Same thing with Paul George. Like, I don't know. I know there's been some reporting that he's making progress, but for the last few weeks, since Paul George's injury, everything I've been hearing is that the Clippers were effectively preparing to go into the first round without Paul George, and they could not have drawn a worse first-round matchup. Like, you think they could use a defensive-minded wing in a series they're going to have to match up with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker? Like, that's going to be a very difficult matchup for the Clippers to win.
Okay, and then do you want to, before I let you go, add your boxing analysis to Gobert? What was more impressive, the reach? What was it? His reach is impressive.
I wouldn't call it impressive at all, actually. Oh. No leverage on the punch. I mean, you're talking about a 7-footer, you know, 280. You know, you got to really step into that punch if you're going to throw it. But to Gobert, I don't know if it's to his credit, but that would have been a lengthier suspension if he went for his head. I'll tell you that much. Like, Gobert, he aimed for the chest on that. Gobert could have aimed for the head. If he had taken a swing and connected with the jaw of Kyle Anderson, not only would Kyle Anderson probably be in some trouble, you know, physically, but we would have seen the last of Rudy Gobert, at the least, for this season, and maybe the last of Rudy Gobert of Minnesota.
Well, he figuratively and literally punched down. I still can't believe, you know, I understand that we didn't even talk about Mason Plumlee and Bones Highland. I just can't believe that this happened in the final Sunday twice. It's kind of nuts.
I'm more... Bizarrely, I'm more bothered by the Jaden McDaniels punch. Like, what are you doing? Like, you hit a concrete wall. Like, that video was crazy, too. Like, he just winds up and cracks a concrete wall. And a split second after he does it, he knows exactly what happened. Yeah. Like, you can see him cradle his hand immediately, and he knows exactly what he did. So, to lose, you know, a guy like McDaniels, who's an elite defender, great player, to lose a guy like him at that, you know, because of that, that's even crazier than Rudy, heat of the moment, going after Kyle Anderson.
Well, look for more of my texts and calls, Chris. Certainly when you're out here in Los Angeles, we'll have you back in here. Enjoy the play-in tournament. And those stats still go nowhere, right? Or are we going to start compiling play-in tournament history stats? Otherwise,
I've actually asked that a couple of times. They're not really sure yet. Those stats right now do currently go nowhere.
They go nowhere.
I wouldn't be surprised in the future to see them eventually folded into the postseason.
Why not? I don't understand. They are technically, it's a playoff game, right? It's an elimination game for the loser tomorrow night. Wednesday night.
I agree with
it's
you.
It's an elimination game. It is.
Yeah, I agree
Wednesday.
With you. I think the NBA kind of got caught a little, you know, a little underprepared in the bubble when they that was the first year they did it.
Right.
They said, no, these stats are nothing, But now, I think when we move forward, we'll see them become playoffs.
If I'm not mistaken, didn't Curry have one of his best games in quote unquote playoffs? Right? Didn't the Warriors and Lakers play a play-in game once, and it was dynamite? And those stats went nowhere.
Lillard had one too, maybe.
That's right.
Tatum had a 50-point game.
Right. Pat Bev cried for nothing. Yeah. You know, but he's back. Oh, by the way, he's back. He's back in the play-in tournament. Yep. What happens if the Bulls move, right? The waterworks 2 years in a row. It'd be fantastic. See, I'm giving you plot lines. So you're welcome.
I appreciate that.
Take care, Chris. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, brother.
You got it.
That's Chris Mannix, everybody. Follow him at SI Chris Mannix on Twitter. What do you think? Heat versus Celtics, you concerned, Christopher?
Yeah, 100%.
Heat concern you more than the Sixers? Because you've been laughing about the Sixers. The other day, you're like, what have they done? You're not worried about him?
That was fake bravado is what that
is.
Fake bravado. Can't touch
so you're more concerned about the Heat than the Sixers.
Yes, because the Heat play weird, dumb basketball. It's just Jimmy Butler going to the foul line 20 times. And like Bam and Hero and Dunk, like these guys could get super hot, and then suddenly we're down 3-2 going back to Boston. You're like, well, what's happening?
Doesn't Embiid go to the line 20 times? Or he and Harden, you know, sometimes combine for like 30 trips to the line.
They've been known to make quite a few trips to the line.
And James Harden is also known to have lots of playoff success.
This guy.
James Harden has never had a guy like Joel Embiid, though. Well, I mean, he had Durant, so I take that back.
So you're not concerned about your first round matchup?
I'm not so much concerned for the Sixers. I'm highly concerned for the Clippers.
Well, I mean, my buddy Doug, who was kind enough to take Coop and I to the Clipper game on his seats on Saturday, he was totally caught. He wanted them to lose. He wanted no. He's like, when the Clippers put their starters on the floor, he's like, really? Because he wanted no part of the Suns.
I mean,
but the problem was they beat the Lakers. If they really wanted to avoid the Suns, they should have just
lost to the Lakers. We don't know how to do that, Rich.
What do you mean you don't know how to do that?
And Clippers don't know how to lose to the Lakers. So I can understand. Oh, even if it was
you guys.
In their best interest, they would not know how to do that.
Let me join the party.
Okay.
Let me join the party. Cavs better look out.
Yeah.
I'm serious. This is house money for the Knicks.
No, you're supposed to be here.
No, it's house money for the Knicks.
Why?
Because I know that they're supposed to be here, but everybody's overlooking them. Everybody.
Yeah, it's just been about the big three in the East.
It's correct.
Right.
Everyone's overlooking them. This is the, I guess, everyone's overlooking us battle. Certainly, since everyone's overlooking this 4-5 because you just discussed what the other 4-5 is, involving Kevin Durant and the Suns against Kawhi and the Clippers. Like, that's a huge 4-5. Everyone's going to be fascinated by that 4-5. Cavs and the Knicks, it's just like, okay. I think that might be one of the most wildly entertaining series of the first round.
I hope you guys take out the Bucks.
And so so everyone's like, boy, the Mavs blew it on Brunson, but we're not buying into Brunson going on a run in the playoffs, huh? Okay.
There's no reason the Knicks can't beat the Cavs. Who's saying that?
Didn't Brunson almost drop 50 on the Cavs a couple weeks ago?
Brunson's nice, man.
Here we go.
There's no reason the Knicks can't win that series.
I'm with you. And so then somebody's going to have to take on the Bucks and crash the party.
Well, I take that back. Didn't Randall just sprain his ankle?
You know what?
That could be the one thing.
It's okay. You'll just wrap it with James Dolan's scarf. Let's go.
Hey.
Let's go.
Schmecky scarf.
The Schmecky scarf.
Yeah. By the way, the Schmecky scarf can also act as a tourniquet. All right. We'll take a break. Wow. Let's talk Masters when we come back. A tradition unlike any other. Rooting against the LIV Tour players. That's next on the Rich Eisen Show. Men, do you get distracted during the day thinking about your underarms sweating, itching, or emitting an odor? Do those thoughts keep you from showing care when it counts? New and improved Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant with 72-hour sweat and odor protection and 1/4 moisturizing cream helps you forget about your underarms so you can be present for the moments that matter. Don't let underarm insecurities keep you at arm's distance from the ones you care about. Buy new and improved Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant wherever personal care products are sold.
April is National Financial Literacy Month. What is financial literacy? It's applying different skills effectively, including managing your finances, budgeting, and saving. It just so happens the Cumulus Podcast Network has three great podcasts to help raise your financial IQ. Stacking Benjamins with Joe Saul-Sehy, Bankrate's 2023 Best Personal Finance Podcast.
What's one of life's biggest expenses that we can maybe talk about reducing?
Housing.
Is housing on the list? Buying a house is the number two expense of all these expenses. What's a way that we can reduce our housing expense?
Move from Seattle to Florida.
Wow, spoken like somebody with a little knowledge of that situation.
Afford anything with financial journalist Paula Pant.
You have many financial goals. You want to buy or pay off your house. You need to replace your car. You want to pay for a wedding, send your kids to college, travel the world, and one day retire. But how?
And Webby Award-winning Brown Ambition with Tiffany the Budgetista Alice and personal finance expert Mandy Woodruff.
When I was crafting my resume in my career, I wasn't thinking about the job I had. I was always thinking, like, what's going to impress the person who has my next opportunity and make them want to have a conversation with me? And yeah, I think people are not thinking that far ahead.
That's why we'd be leaning into you, career coach.
So, as you look to improve your financial literacy, follow Stacking Benjamins, Afford Anything, and Brown Ambition wherever you listen.
Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, back on the air, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger is the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. So, a couple of observations about the Masters. Boy, I was wondering why they were playing out there on Saturday. It was pouring rain, yeah. And it was, you know, they stopped play both Friday and Saturday. It's obvious they wanted no part of playing today. They wanted no part of playing Monday. Otherwise, you know, they certainly wouldn't have sent people back on the course after a tree fell. And I'm not saying that they in any way, shape, or form put anyone in danger knowingly or purposefully, but it just struck me as weird that when it was really raining and you're putting over underneath umbrellas and everyone's shooting it right, left, and what otherwise.
You could see the standing water on green on the green.
It was just
awful.
But they wanted to get to Sunday, and it came down to the leaders having to play 30 holes in order to win the green jacket. Rahm was able to do it, and Koepka wasn't. And I understand that people are saying Koepka's not used to playing 72 holes because the Live Tour plays 54. And I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't really believe that. I'm just,
you know, like Koepka, like Koepka's forgotten how to play 72-hole tournaments. Get out of here with that noise. And as a matter of fact, this whole business that the Live Tour, you know, plays fewer tournaments or is just different competition and doesn't get these guys ready. Look, I am as critical of anybody who plays on the Live Tour as anybody else. Would I take money from the Saudi government to do my job right here? No. It's not like they're offering me any money anyway. They didn't reach out to me to be their broadcaster. I was thrilled that Barkley didn't take that money. We would be missing him greatly on the NCAA tournament and the upcoming basketball play, NBA playoffs, and over the last 2 years. He would have disappeared on the CW. I don't think there's a single soul after the first two times would say, let's go check out the Live Tour and hear what Barkley's got to say. And I know that they hope that everybody's going to now see what does Phil do as a follow-up in Australia, and what does Patrick Reed do as a follow-up, and how does Koepka bounce back? Or maybe they hope that they, you know, fans are buying Fireball Golf GC shirts because they saw Sergio in it. I just don't know how the Live Tour is going to break through. We'll see what happens in 2 weeks when they're playing in Australia next, because we saw top five finishes out of Live Tour players, plural. Koepka was in the lead for much of it, and Patrick Reed finished up really strong.
And Phil, T2.
And Phil Mickelson.
Unbelievable.
Let me just say this about Phil. If you had told me, first of all, he showed up looking great. I don't know what, is he on Ozempic? Is he on a plan? I don't know whatever he's on, but he showed up looking fit and trim. I'm a 53-year-old man, still with back problems, haven't played pickleball 3 weeks ago, but I eat like garbage half the time. Not a lot of the time. I'm saying that now. I'm backing up just in case Susie's listening and watching right now.
No.
I'm for effect. But Phil, if you had told me, if anybody had told any of us 15, 20 years ago, that in the 2023 Masters, one guy would withdraw, one guy would finish second after shooting 65 in the final round, Tiger or Phil, who would you choose?
Oh, yeah.
Please, end of story, question. Right? Yeah. Tiger showing up all yoked up because he trained with a Navy SEAL or whatever,
yeah.
And Phil with the dad bod in his late 30s, you know, and you got to give it up. I know what he did, what he said, what he's done. The guy showed up at age 52 at the Masters and shot a final round 65, the best final round of his life, his best round since 96, period. Mm-hmm. And he just was terrific. He was dialing it in. He was making putts. He was firing darts. Age 52. He set the record for highest finish, oldest player to finish that high ever.
There were only four rounds of 65 the whole tournament. Rahm and Koepka both did it in round one. So did Victor Hovland. And then Phil on Sunday. This guy's been hot garbage for the better part of a year. He's playing on a tour that nobody watches, and he hasn't been playing well there. And to think he was going to show up at Augusta, he was one of the most popular players bet to miss the cut. No one thought he could do this, and it was pretty remarkable. And he was doing all the Phil-like things. He was hitting driver off the deck. He was flopping wedges like out of the trees. It was an unbelievable performance out of him. I'm shocked.
Wearing aviators, giving thumbs up to everybody who was just like...
He was wearing aviators in the downpour when it was 50 degrees. It was stunning.
Thumbs and aviators. And Tiger withdrew. And I've never...
As he should have.
I've never felt as old as I have watching Tiger Woods withdraw with an injury. And hopefully...
He was limping pretty bad on Saturday. It was
awful to watch. It was awful to watch. And Phil not only makes the cut, he damn near wins the tournament.
I mean, he was the low man in the clubhouse.
At 5:17 Eastern time on a Masters Sunday, he was the leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah. Wild.
It's just that Rahm kept making putts and kept on making shots, and he was unbelievable. And John Rahm's got another jacket. The Spaniard with another jacket. And that leads me to the last thing to talk about. John Rahm throwing Zach Ertz under the bus. Now, I didn't think that would be a sentence that'd be coming out of my mouth.
Ever.
But John Rahm is an Arizona State Sun Devil, right?
Correct.
And look who's playing down in the state of Arizona now for the last couple of years, Zach Ertz. And they know each other. And as Rahm has the jacket, would you have to slip that on, right? Is that the phrase? Otherwise, I'll have my sportscaster card removed. You slip. You have the jacket slipped on you. Okay. All right. After the jacket got slipped on him by Scottie Scheffler, who made a nice little run a couple times on Sunday, nobody could put it together. And Rahm was just that dart he threw on 14 after Koepka finally, you know, got his first birdie in like a day and a half. He just wrapped things up. But he had this reveal as he's there amongst all the jackets and all the patrons who had the ability to watch, and the whole crowd, this is what he had to say.
For those people who believe in jinxing other players, people, and whatever it may be, Thursday morning, when I was getting on the golf cart to get to this putting green 10 minutes before my tee time, I saw a text from a good friend of mine, and I'm going to name him because he is a Super Bowl winning champion, Zach Ertz. He said the text... I'm gonna paraphrase here, but he said that first green looking like a walk in the park or something like that right now. 10 minutes before I four putted to start the tournament. So, thank you, Zach. Don't ever do that again, please.
So,
unreal.
In case you're wondering how accurate that story was, maybe just in the blush of winning. He didn't accurately tell the story. J.J. Watt was apparently on that very text chain as well and tweeted out the exchange. And it's accurate. Zach Ertz, in fact, sent a tweet to him, to him saying exactly that, saying, "Let's have a day, John. Start fast." And then J.J. Watt chimed in, "Let's go, John. Pretend you're playing with Zach and I. You'll set the course record." And then Zach Ertz said, "First hole green looks like a walk in the park." And then Zach Ertz responds, "Four putt to start the round, not ideal." And then, of course, I said, "Pretend you're playing with us, not like you're playing like us," says J.J. Watt. With some laughing, crying emojis. "Can confirm," says J.J. Watt.
That is just so funny.
So I ask you, I mean, speaking it into existence, you're trying to give him some nice swing thoughts. Or you just leave it alone. Just good luck. A little GL. Hit send.
It's 10 minutes before you know he's teeing off. Why are you texting him at all?
I don't know. Why last not? Thoughts?
10 minutes before the Masters starts?
How about John Rahm on his phone, though?
Right? If that's my boy, I'm hitting him up whenever.
He's on the range, maybe, and he's like walking
over.
He
said he was in the cart. Ertz said, I apologize for absolutely nothing. You can expect these texts every major going forward, my friend. Congratulations. And I'll tell you what, now... That's even more impressive that Rahm four-putted his first hole.
He spotted everybody two strokes.
And he still won the Masters.
His Thursday round was just amazing. To start with a double and then have go 9-under after that is just... He's been the best player in the world. He obviously deserved it. I actually think, you know, Brooks had a four-shot lead when the day started on Sunday, obviously loses by four. I still think it's a big win for him. He's been injured for the better part of 2 years. Yeah. He goes to live thinking his career is never going to be the same again, and now he's healthy, and he had the 54-hole lead. I'm excited. This is going to be an awesome major season.
Yeah, and that's the way golf is going to be now.
Yep.
If you are a fan of golf, professional golf, you're most likely going to turn on one of the alphabet networks, over-the-air networks. You've got maybe Golf Channel. Our former home in Peacock. You can watch, by the way, everything that I've just mentioned right here on Roku.
Yep.
And that's how you'll take in your golf. Or if you're really a diehard and you are kind of sitting around going, oh, okay, that's right. The LIV Tour is playing this weekend. And I kind of do want to see what those guys are up to. I'll find the CW and flip it on, which you can watch right here on Roku. And other than that, you're just going to see everybody get back together again for these majors, as long as the majors aren't going to step in and put the same lid on the LIV Tour players as the PGA Tour. I think that's already established. And that these LIV Tour players are going to show up and 1,000,000% perform well. Because they're insanely talented. Now, if LIV Tour players in these tournaments start blowing it on the final day consistently, then we'll start talking about, do they need to play more than 54 holes? But I can't imagine these guys are going to start forgetting what it's like to put their stamp on something with a final 18. In the meantime, the Masters is just, it really is unlike anything else. Mm-hmm. Nothing makes me want to go play golf more than watching the Masters. Nothing is more beautiful than this golf course. Nothing is more aspirational than this golf course about wanting to play and play well or wanting to go there. It's the only major where it's the first major every year. And it's the only major that's played on the same course every year. And it's the only major with the history that you can just have flashbulb memories based on the hole. Mm-hmm. And it's the only major where every hole has its own personality. Name me another. Like the U.S. Open wants to beat the players. That's the sense I get.
Yeah, they want to even par.
They want you worse. To like survive the Open. The Pick Masters
rough, can't even see the ball.
The Masters wants to challenge you, but is 1,000% up for yeah. You beat the golf course, we're fine with that because that means you can come from 5-6 back and win a tournament. Anybody's in it. Anybody is in it. You could be 5 back going to the back 9 and you can't sit there and go, that guy's finished. Mm-hmm. Eagle here, eagle there, but you also know the guy who's about to follow you has those same opportunities.
Also just
water
look.
Around there. Mm-hmm. You got to fire darts. There are holes that are very challenging, but they all have their own personality and memory.
And look at the score. Look at the scoreboard this weekend, Rich. Sam Bennett, the amateur, was in the final group on Saturday. He was 8-under, finished 2-under. Phil, a 52-year-old guy, finishes T2. A guy who hasn't played in 2 years, hasn't contended in the majors in 3. Brooks Koepka had the 54-hole lead. Anything can happen at Augusta.
We just got to get rid of the amateur. That's absurd. They gave Sam a nice trophy. He doesn't get a check, right?
No, he would have won. He would have won a nice chunk of change. But well, he has a nice zero next to the prize.
But again, it's the first amateur we've seen to Instagram out a thank you to his 8 sponsors.
True.
So let's call it the collegiate player, right?
He would have won $261,000.
Yeah, by the way, which I'm sure is less than his NIL money overall from Texas A&M, I'd assume. Or it's not, and that would be a nice chunk of change for him to get. But like I said, we don't live in the world of Francis Wiemei and Bagger Vance anymore. Like, let's bring us into the 21st century here and give him a check. Take out the A, still throw him into the concept of you're an amateur, but you're just a college player, right? I don't know. World's changed. But a wonderful Masters, just a lot of fun. I wish it was a little bit more competitive on Sunday, but again, just watching the course and seeing it, and good shots are rewarded. How many times you watch an open and it's just like a great shot? It's just like, really? It's going to roll all the way down there? Really? Oh, one more bounce and you're in a rough that you can't see because it's up to your shins? Yeah. I mean, the Masters is really, it's perfect in so many different ways. We'll take a break. 844-204-RICH. Number to dial. Congratulations to John Rahm, and way to call out your buddy Zach Ertz. That's the way you play golf. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH, number to dial, just talking about how great was following the Masters on the app. You know, screen mirror to your television set, perfect. Because we stream sports here on the Rich Eisen Show on the Roku channel. That's what we do for a little.
Buddy.
Okay. Starting the second full week of Major League Baseball.
Excited.
The Angels are above 500. Let's go. They're 5-4. But, you know, hey.
Hey, I mean, look.
Trout's hitting trucks out in left center field.
Dude, hitting bombs.
He is.
Trout's hitting bombs.
Let's go. Also, come on, Tampa, Angels. Let's Tampa make the playoffs. They have not lost yet. Yanks are 6-3 and three games out.
Oof. Jeez.
That is correct. That has happened.
Yeah. Exciting.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. Pitch clock to me doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. Although, I haven't seen it yet in the stadium. I'm wondering if it's different when you see the clock. They leave it out of view on the television broadcast.
Yeah,
for a reason.
It does pop up on, you know, whatever.
I'm wondering what it's like in the stadium, though.
Yeah.
I wonder what it's like in the stadium. Do you see that people are using outfield shifts?
Yeah.
Teams are using outfield shifts, so the left fielder is in left center field, the center fielder is in right center field, and the right fielder comes walking down to where they would have put the third baseman in right field on a shift.
Right. Well, that's kind of the fix.
So it's just like, right. So if you're going to hit it down on the ground, you're going to hit it hard, you're still getting shifted over, but the outfielder, the right fielder is coming down. Don't like it. Don't like it at all. You know what I also saw this weekend? And again, I'm not going to call anyone out because we're talking kids. I saw in a Little League game this weekend, a kid hit a home run, did the
nice.
Did this walk, you know, rounding between first and second base.
Did a bomb, like over the fence?
Over the fence. Hell of a shot.
Nice.
But did this.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, okay.
And
this, you know, again, this is why a lot of people push back about, because kids do it. But it's up to the coaches to say, hey, you know, act like you've been there before. Right. You know, don't do that to somebody.
Did it look like he got disciplined at all? Or?
No, very, very much opposite.
Oh, did he get thrown at next at bat?
These are 12-year-olds, man. And I think they know each other from from like travel ball, too.
I mean,
there's like history. I don't know. But it's just, again, like, this is one of those things where you just don't want to. That's where people push back. Like, you know, I know we act like you've been there before. You do it to each other, and kids see it, and they start doing it. And it's, I guess, all fine and dandy when it's at the top level, professional or national championship. But kids see it, which is why the NFL got rid of celebrations a long time ago. But now they're back. So what do we do tonight? What are we going to do tonight?
That was whack.
Probably catch up on Ted Lasso. I'm a one episode behind.
You want one behind? Okay.
Might rewatch Succession, to be honest.
I don't want to say too much about Succession because I don't want to give anything away, except to say it. The latest episode of Succession is one of the best television hours I've ever seen. It is up there with, name it, Breaking Bad.
Pine Barrens.
Sopranos.
That's Sopranos, Pine Barrens, which okay, you, is one of the greatest.
You put it up there with any of them.
Yep.
The writing, the acting, the directing, the plot. all of it. I honestly don't want to say another word because it is so jarring, or what have you want to put it, is that it's been with me all day. Woke up thinking about it, went to sleep thinking about it, sitting around thinking about it. Like, that's how amazing an episode of television.
It was great.
That was truly unbelievable. So you're going to watch that again?
I think I might.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, after I read all the articles and listen to the podcast, I might go back and see if I missed anything.
Is spring break over for you?
There was no spring break.
Oh, that's right. Your kid's three.
Yeah.
Mine is not over.
It's not over? They didn't go back today?
No.
Why?
Great question.
Wait, there's just no rhyme or reason? They just stayed home?
I don't. They're back tomorrow. They go back tomorrow. Wow. Not today.
Wow.
Sort of like Game of Thrones, not today.
Wow.
And Susie and I want to just Dracarys all over the whole situation because it's time for them to go. It's time for them to go back to school.
Wow.
It's been 2+ weeks. Enough's enough. Enough is enough.
Should we go to the driving range? Are you just like trying not to get home to avoid them, or?
No, I love my children. I don't care. I don't understand what you're saying.
I'm just saying, you might.
No, I love them.
Might
it's great.
Take the long way.
No, it's just.
No,
it's just. It's just. It's just. Take the long way home. Yeah. Little super tramp?
Yeah, sure.
Can you put that in Waze? Take the long way home?
Just give me the long way.
No. I love my children. It's great to have them, but it's time for them to go back to school.
Got it.
I think anybody who's listening and watching this show knows, like I said, with spring break. Sebastian Maniscalco had a great video where he's just like, when did spring break start? Like, because when I was in school, my dad never had a break.
Right, exactly.
You know, like, what the hell is going on? But it's almost over.
All right, good luck. Godspeed.
You know when it's over in Los Angeles? When traffic returns.
Traffic's back.
Yeah.
Is it back?
It was actually not bad this morning.
Great show. Funny show. I want to thank Tom Pelissero. I want to thank Chris Mannix. And, of course, Ndamukong Suh in studio.
That was great.
How about that? Of all the things we learned today, Warren Buffett does not have a cell phone. If you need him, you need to call somebody else. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We will chat with you tomorrow right here on The Rich Eisen Show. Check us out on the Roku channel every day between 12 and 3 Eastern Time. We're going to wrap things up on the Roku channel in a moment.
Conspiracy theories. Paranormal. UFOs.
In the 1960s, the United States and the Soviet Union started developing directed energy microwave devices. And even to this day, the United States government is still continuing its research into high-power microwaves. It is nothing compared to what China is doing.
Theories of the Third Kind on YouTube or wherever you listen.